From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Eric Logan, sitting in for Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is as old as storytelling itself, when, whether overtly or covertly, people made social commentary by acting it out, sometimes using puppets to say things which could not be said out loud or acted out in what we now consider to be nursery rhymes, or political satire acted out by comic poets in the ancient Greek amphitheaters, and Shakespeare up to modern work, such as the couple that we'll be discussing today. According to Blanca Pilar, in the September 12th edition of the Los Angeles Times, quote, "This theatrical category comprises political dramas, political grandstanding, guerrilla theater, a form of street theater that aims to question various social norms, and more broadly, political stunts. Therefore, we can state that the conscious use of theater in order to make political statements may be interpreted as political theater," close quote. Modern related short-form skits could be as diverse as Monty Python and Saturday Night Live. New York Times writer Michael Paulson says in the September 25th edition, quote, "For the second year in a row, the most staged play in America will be What the Constitution Means to Me, Heidi Schreck's look at this country's fundamental legal document, seen through the lens of gender and autobiography. Further down the list, POTUS, selling her fingers farce about a group of women caught up in a male president's scandals." He continues, "An annual survey by American Theater Magazine finds that there will be 16 productions this year of What the Constitution Means to Me, which ran in 2019. Today we'll discuss both these plays, a couple of excellent and very different local examples of political theater, and together we'll explore why we need this type of theater, what is the desired or potential impact on our society, and how it can be an expression both of our hopes and our fears. I had the wonderful opportunity this past Sunday to attend the award-winning work What's the Constitution Means to Me at the JCC, and I was deeply moved by that performance. Today, you'll meet the principal actor from that play, as well as the director, and the director of something completely different, to borrow a term, the director of POTUS, a farce about a terrible president, a play which is also very, very popular. Joining me at the table today are Eric Grody, who is the longtime theater critic and reporter for the New York Times with more than 300 bylines. He's the director of Goldring Arts, Style, and Culture Journalism Program at the Syracuse University's Newhouse School. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Skip Greer, director of What the Constitution Means to Me at the JCC Center Stage. Welcome, Skip.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Sarah Meyer Freid, and I probably mispronounced your name. Did I get it right?
You are very close. It's okay. Sarah Meyer Freid.
Thank you, Mayor. We didn't get a chance to ask before we got started, and I should have known from Sunday at the play. Sarah Meyer Freid, who is the principal actor who plays Heidi in What the Constitution Means to Me. And Carrie Young, welcome, by the way.
Thank you.
And Carrie Young, the director of POTUS at Blackfriars Theater.
Hello.
Welcome. It's good to have you here today. First, a disclaimer. One of the cast members of POTUS is a friend and a WXXI Weekend Edition host, Jasmine Singer. I did not know this when initially organizing this show, and it had no bearing on the booking of the show. However, transparency is important to us. So, Eric Grody, please comment on political theater. What is it, and why is it important to us historically and especially now? And if I made any errors in my introduction, please set the record straight.
No, I
could say that some of us welcome fact-checking, but that would be leaning into.
Well, you mentioned that definition of political theater, which was encompassed a wide variety of definitions. I would argue that it goes even wider than that. I mean, I feel like these are political plays, yes, in that they are plays about politics. But, I mean, to me, so much of every playwright and every director, the decisions they make of who they put on the stage, who they don't put on the stage, how those people behave and act and speak, I mean, those are all inherently political in my mind. That said, I mean, these two plays, which are both very, very different plays but very exciting works, you know, take a look at – whether it's a political document in one case, the Constitution, or a politician in another, and by thinking about, you know, what those profess to be and then what they actually are, you know, the gap, the chasm in kind of both cases, can make for a really entertaining and really thought-provoking night out at the theater. And I think that's something that is a useful thing to think about.
Excellent. You know, we are talking about political theater today. And so listeners, you, if you would like to be a part of this conversation, please feel free to give us a call at 844-295-TALK, or that's 844-295-8255, or locally, that's 585-263-9994, or you can send us an email at connections.org. So, Sarah, what drew you to Constitution? What drew you? And I know you answered this question on the stage, but all of our listeners weren't there. So
well, hopefully they can make it to one of our next.
I hope so, too.
Heidi Schreck's language is very accessible to me. I am also a storyteller like her who interrupts my own story to tell another story. She flits between incredible humor and devastating information, whether it's tragedies or injustice. It's very educational, but it bounces around so many places, so you don't get too bored for too long. But I also appreciate that she addresses not just historical injustices or harms, but things that are happening now so that we all feel a sense of ownership about the Constitution. It's not something that just belongs to elected officials or the Supreme Court. It's something that affects all of our lives, and we deserve to be informed about it so we can be informed voters and participants in our society.
This past week, a friend, neighbor and friend who on our recommendation came to see the play, talked about how accurate it was from a legal standpoint in terms of the Constitution and the issues associated with that. And I really appreciated that. What have you seen in terms of how that speaks to us today?
Well, we actually have had the privilege of having a constitutional scholar as a reference for us in this process, Don Braveman, and he was like, is this playwright a lawyer? And we said, no, she's just very smart and does her homework. And for those unfamiliar with the play, it's based on her own experience as a teenager doing oratorical contests about the Constitution. So she has some foundation of familiarity. For me, it was really enlightening to understand how specifically amendments have affected my life and the journey of it and the rights and privileges I have or don't have. And it has enabled me to, in conversation, casually toss in, well, you know, in the 14th Amendment, that's part of why we have desegregation, and I can reference the clause. And it feels like something that was so unattainable before. Like the Constitution was a lofty document that you had to have a lot of education to be able to read, and it's become more accessible to me.
So at the risk of crossing that line between interviewer or not really interviewing you, we're having a conversation, but there were a couple of things. When I went to see that play, number one, I want to pinch myself because I'm sitting here with you.
I feel the same way.
Oh, yeah, right. being an African-American and then resonating with what your character was going through as a woman was deeply compelling, really deeply compelling. And yet I looked around the audience, and there were only a couple of other black faces in the room, right? It was both a positive in a sense that it was, I was so glad that there were people that were interested in this topic to be there. But I was also sad because I think the play gives hope. I don't want to disclose too much about what you do at the end, but that we get a chance to wrestle with that.
Yes.
Right? Do you want to talk at all about that?
Well, I think one of the things you're touching on is a larger makeup of theater audiences in general, and that there are other discussions to examine why theater may not be more broadly accessible and engaging to everyone. But I would say that if you came to our student matinees, which we've had several of, you would see that composition flip. And we had a really exciting conversation with students just yesterday from School of the Arts, School Without Walls, and Wheatland Chailai. And they were fired up. They were responsive. They had a lot of questions about, like, what actual change can we enact? Or will people listen to us? Because Heidi Schreck is a white woman. And she even said in interviews, you know, I'm a middle-aged white woman. I think my story has meaning. And I think it's important for people like myself to model stepping aside and sharing the platform and hearing the voices of more diverse, often less listened to, less amplified voices. And I love that she writes what she knows from her lived experience, but also touches on the intersectionality of any identity. So there are elements where she has been privileged, and there are elements where she has experienced oppression, and touches on the connective thread, since it's connections, of all of the ways in which, no matter what our identity is, we've all benefited and we have all been harmed by elements of our history. And so how do we collectively assess that and really attain the ideals of liberty and justice for all?
Hmm. So it was interesting, as I was doing my homework in preparation for this conversation, some of the things that I read on the internet talked about almost the novelty of political theater.
Mm.
And Eric, you spoke to that a little bit. But from my perspective, theater's always been political in the sense that in the neighborhood I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. And at a young age, we went to the Arena Players, which was an African-American production there. And, you know, A Raisin in the Sun or Look Who's Coming to Dinner. I mean, those are political plays. And those are things that my parents made sure that that I consumed, I think, both for our sake, but also to support an African-American business going mm-hmm. forward, right? Mm-hmm. An African-American effort. Is political theater, and I'm going to open this up for everybody, is political theater really a novelty?
I'll just jump in really quickly here with to follow up something that you were saying, too, because I had a reaction to it as well, which is still the same topic in a way. I just think it's all political theater. I don't see... I understand that some of it are directly written about politics, like these two shows are. But as you were saying, I'm pointing at Eric right now, but as you were saying, it's hard to say anything right now that's not political.
Mm.
And one of the things that happened in the show early on from Heidi is to challenge not just, I'm pointing at Sarah now, but also everybody else who comes and who's here to find a personal connection mm-hmm. to the Constitution. And it also this play also talks about, you talked about some of the damage that some people have received over the 230 years that the Constitution has been in place, that actually is inside of all of us.
Mm.
I'm a great believer of, and I apologize for other audiences that I've spoken to hear me say this again, but I've kind of lived by this code. There's a wonderful Chicago writer, newspaper writer named Finley Peter Dunn, long gone, who used to say that the purpose of the press or the newspaper is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
Mm.
And I think that's what theater does,
yes.
And the best theater does both, and it does it for all of us. Now, quickly segueing, and I'll stop in just a second, but quickly segueing, and I'm pointing to Sarah again to say what a beautiful job she does, because she talked about those high pin turns that go from
yes.
bounce of humor
yes.
to the guts
yes.
of the play,
yes.
back and forth over and over, which is what Heidi's written, right. And that's what's necessary. Because she spends that time comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable mm-hmm. and then doing both. And it takes a rare performer to do that. So, all right, I'll shut up. Go on.
No, it's that is
go
true.
On. Go on.
No, it really is true. You know, I found myself, my eyes are watering there a few times, and then I looked around kind of furtively and it's like, well, nobody else is crying. I better stop it. But
you're not alone. You are not alone.
Yeah. I can't see all the faces.
No.
Right.
Mm.
So tell us, how has this play, Skip, Sarah, how has this play shaped or reshaped your thinking?
Mm. I'll just jump in with a really quick one because we were just talking about this downstairs. I'm embarrassed to say that I did not know this, that Thomas Jefferson said that it should be rewritten every 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look at the face.
Oh, yeah. I heard that from the stage.
I did not know that.
Either.
I did not
mm-hmm.
know that. And that's it. That's a really interesting thing to hold in our minds with the interpreters of our document are the people who are sitting on the Supreme Court right now. And they often have, you can point your finger at the originalists that are on that, who keep moving back to the founding fathers saying, no, no, this is what they meant. Well, here's Thomas Jefferson saying, yeah, this is written for another time. Every generation needs to rewrite it. I'm not a proponent of actually rewriting it. I'm not. But I am in favor of those amendments and reexamining
yeah.
that document with a clear eye constantly.
Yes.
So that's one of the things that I've been affected by.
Yes, I agree with everything that Skip said. I mean, I think one of the things that's mentioned in the play is when you know, that phrase, freedom and liberty for all, all people, all citizens, were basically white male landowning
exactly.
citizens. So many people, even in this room, would not have been considered. And that the framers had intended that this is a document that should continue to, in some way, evolve to reflect the society as it grows. You know, if you, one argument is that if you are an originalist, you include that original idea of we need to keep having dialogue so that we continue to reflect our true values. And listening and talking to young people after the, I mean, anybody, everybody, there's so many valuable perspectives. And I've been really moved by what some folks have shared with me afterwards, what they laughed at, what they were, you know, challenged by. But listening to young people who are engaged and who are going, you know, there's some issues that are affecting us more urgently, perhaps, than other generations. And how do we move forward? I think that passion is something to harness. And I think what came up in that conversation, too, was with the students yesterday was we need to listen to young people. And it's good for young people to be listening to the generations before to understand, as you brought up in the talk back, the trajectory of where we've come.
My concern about the originalist, or at least the way it's being interpreted today, is that the way I see it is it's used as an excuse to try to go back to behaviors and norms that did not include everybody or that remove rights as opposed to becoming more expansive in terms of rights.
The idea is originalism equals objectivism, right?
It does
that
not.
You're not right.
Yeah.
Because
Sorry.
The people who wrote it were people who had perspectives and blind spots and strengths. And we all need to sort of be continuously sort of self-examining and going, who's not included in this conversation? Who, where's the imbalance and how do we rectify that?
And those who interpret it for us have lifetime appointments on that court.
The last thing I'll say is one of the things I talked about with the students is, you know, some of you are going to get to vote this fall. How exciting. Some of you, it might not be till next year or the following year, but you can still be engaged in ways that aren't voting. And when you do vote, if we can't, we don't get to vote on our Supreme Court appointees, but we do get to vote on our Board of Education, on our city councilors, on our local governance, and our votes have that much more import in a smaller contest. So I always try to lean towards hope, you know, our potential empowerment.
Yes. Thank you. That's a good point. Carrie, I'd like to bring you into the conversation about POTUS. Now, in the spirit of what Eric said, you almost can't say anything today without it being interpreted as political. So I am sure that your play is going to be interpreted in the light of possibly someone who has been in office. But that's not what the play is about.
A certain someone,
which I'm not going to say because I am not going to be political today. Wink, wink. No, seriously, I will try my best to be. Yeah, but please,
well,
Carrie, go ahead.
The playwright in her comments, right, as a preface to the script, makes sure that we aren't looking at POTUS, the President of the United States, as in this play, as a specific person.
Mm-hmm. Good.
That it's an amalgamation of, you know, all of the white male presidents that we've had over all of these years, and that all of them have made mistakes and all of them have done things that raised questions in the minds of voters and citizens. And many of those things come out as part of this play.
I don't know how it wouldn't, to be very honest with you. You know, everyone's heard the phrase, you know, power corrupts, absolute power absolutely corrupts. To be the leader of the most powerful nation in the world, to have that kind of power, I can't imagine that you can hold that power without it affecting you somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the Supreme Court says you can do whatever you want and get away with it because we're not going to hold you accountable, that was not meant to be a political statement. I'm just saying what is true. But when you couple it with that, it seems like that would make it even more difficult for you to find your center on a regular basis. It takes a unique person to be able to hold that kind of power and not let it sway how you behave.
Sure. And I also think the enabling that can go on politically through other members of Congress, for instance, allowing that person to get away with things that just aren't right, you know?
Yeah. So tell us about a farce, using a farce to entertain, because that's really what the primary purpose was, right? It wasn't to besmirch any one particular president.
Correct. It's social commentary, it's political, it's all those things wrapped up, and entertainment, of course. It starts out with some very shocking language that the president has used in reference to the First Lady, and it causes an international incident, basically, and the seven women in the White House behind the scenes are trying to clean up his mess. I could use another word, but I will keep it to that. And it's, you know, the press secretary who has to spin all of his stuff into, you know, mitigating what he's actually done or said. And the First Lady, of course, about whom the objectionable language was meant for. They are all working really hard to clean up after him. And comedy ensues. It's very physical comedy. There's, you know, you talk about you can't do a farce without doors. there's, okay. you know, some fun door humor. But it's using humor to really point out some very some things that are very wrong with our system and our way of dealing with society's problems, and how we're all, you know, just paddling along the current, trying to fight off all these political arrows.
So one of the things that was provided to me in terms of prep for today's conversation was actually the script of POTUS. I did not read it on purpose. I read a couple pages at the beginning because I want to go see the play and I don't want to have a spoiler, right? So I didn't want to do that. But I can imagine, and maybe this is too revealing, just about anybody who's been in power of something has had to have people who've been behind them to help clean up when they've screwed up. Because none of us are perfect.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And they do a lot of cleaning.
And I was about to say, some people are less perfect than others. You'll find when you see the script.
All right. That's a good one. Tell you what, we're not going to take a break right now, but I just want to remind you that I'm Eric Logan, sitting in for Evan Dawson. I'm sitting here with Eric Grody, Skip Greer, Sarah Mayer Fried, and Carrie Young. And we are talking about political theater in the U.S., specifically around a couple of the plays that are being in this area, What the Constitution Means to Me, which is still going on at the JCC front stage or center stage, and is happening with the Blackfriars, which is not a cooking group. That's actually a place. but yes, that's so good stuff. And you. And so as you want to join us in this conversation, how has political theater affected you? What is your thought about it? Feel free to join us at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255 or 585-263-9994. Or you can write us at connections.org. I'm going to open this question up for everybody. Political burnout, right? So when we talk about political theater, are we affected at all by the fact that people are sometimes fatigued with politics and don't want anything else to do with it? And I'm going to just preface it by saying when I went to see What the Constitution Means to Me, I didn't think of that as political theater. What I thought of it, well, I didn't know what to really think of it until after I saw it, and it was more to me about what the Constitution means, right? And
yes. I mean, it is also about, you know, some of the legal cases in which the Constitution's amendments have been used to make decisions. I think, you know, it being considered political theater may come down to there are issues that are being discussed in the legal cases or the ramifications of the amendments that can become platforms for politicians. And it is being engaged in our own government, of which politics is a part. But I think it's to me, it feels more about a play that is saying, like, how have we or have we not taken care of each other, and how can we do better? With a lot of humor and a lot of heart. But, you know, to me, again, it goes back to feeling like this was a document that was unattainable to me to read as a layperson, and then learning. And this still goes on. Actually, last night at our show, we had an American Legionnaire in the audience who talked to us and said, you know, I am still seeing these contests happening. So young people are being encouraged to discuss how the Constitution affects their lives. And I feel like, well, if they can do it, I should be able to get in that conversation too.
Just a couple of quick things. Also, the end of this, and you know this from seeing the play, but the beautiful part of it is ending it with a high school student on stage.
Oh, yes.
Actually debating the Constitution
and
watching as Heidi and Sarah pass the baton on and fill us with hope about what's coming.
Shailese Felice, a senior at SOTA, and she is amazing.
Fantastic.
She
fantastic
is amazing.
Performer.
It was a wonderful play.
And I guess I would say in terms of why, whether it's through apathy or, I mean, nobody sits down and picks up a pen or opens up their laptop because they're feeling chipper about how things are going. I mean, you know, these things are often coming from a place of feeling the need to do something, and this is what they do well. So, I mean, both of these plays, and again, they're very different. I think of one of them as more from like a Veep kind of sensibility in terms of the humor and the profanity and the outrageousness, whereas the other one's a little more tempered and kind of West Wing-y in a sense. But, you know, just like those shows, I mean, they come from people like there is something very, very broken. And sometimes we feel somewhat powerless in how to fix it. And if nothing else, you can just kind of try to give voice through it through these surrogates on the stage in two very different ways. But both can be very, very meaningful. And I think, you know, the Constitution, the handoff that Skip mentioned is a very explicit way to do that and be like, all right, somebody needs to do something and you are as good a person as any to do it. But I feel like that's implicit in all these works. I mean, everyone in that room can and should be ready to think differently and then do something with those thoughts.
Yeah, that's one of the things I like about POTUS is the you talked about the fatigue, the political and social fatigue and emotional drain that we're going through. And it just attacks it from a point of complete absurdity and humor, which really gives license to us to laugh about our situations and while pointing out some really important things. But it's just the absurd humor that gives us a chance together in a theater to let go and see it for what it really is, absurd.
Right, right. It's interesting because I was thinking this morning, and we're actually going to go to the phones. We have Paulette Gissendonner, and I was just thinking this morning about opera and some of the political theater that's associated with that. But Paulette, welcome to Connections, and what are your thoughts around that?
You kind of hit it right on the head. As a music educator and opera singer especially, it's interesting to see the correlations and the analogy between political theater, which there has always, in a sense, since there's been theater, been political theater. It's a little bit freer now. I'm thinking about the late Renaissance, early Baroque and classical operas, La Sierva Patrona, where it was very dangerous for people to say against those who were in power what they really felt. But what they discovered in theater and in opera was that if you can make people laugh about it, you can say almost anything. If you can make them laugh about it. And I lived in the Caribbean long enough, and with the politics down there, the format that's used there is calypso and paisa, where if there are issues with the political leaders, it might be dangerous even now to say it out loud, but if you put it in a song and make people laugh at themselves, you can say what you need to say.
So true.
So it's very interesting.
So once again, full disclosure, and we'll go to you in just a second. Paulette, Professor Gissendonner, is my voice teacher, and we sing together with the Rochester Oratorio Society,
We
got some great performances coming up, and she's a phenomenal soloist, and I've had the privilege of doing a couple of duets with her. So Paulette, I'm so glad you called in today.
You're welcome. Enjoy.
Thank you. Eric, you're about to comment?
Well, actually, it's Skip.
But Skip, I'm sorry. You know, I'm getting it. My bad.
Alike.
Eric, no, you don't look alike. All right.
I wanted to actually give a bit of a shout out because I'm going to spin one of your comments a little bit on its head, which is both of these plays. I know that at the JCC is doing extremely well. There's still some tickets available this weekend, but it's doing extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that this one will also, POTUS will do extremely well because of its farcical nature
we
as well.
We just added another show.
There you go. See, there you go. So it's kind of a reprieve from it. But here, I have to give a shout out to Ralph and to anybody mm-hmm. else who's doing this right now, Ralph Maranto over at the JCC, because in fact, doing political theater right now at this time during an election, because of what you called fatigue, is a brave move.
Mm.
I've seen a minefield over the years of plays of producers who thought this would be a great time to do this, and it's in fact not the true. Mm. Because there's an immediate resistance to this might be a great play, but I'm swallowing politics every day right now.
Mm.
So, and of course, it's also the best time to do it. And the beauty of both of these shows is, and now we can say this because this one's already up and healthy and doing great, is that the humor in both these shows keeps bringing you back to invest deeper mm-hmm, and deeper mm-hmm. into what's below it.
Hmm.
So there you
excellent,
go.
Excellent. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk with you and with our callers, with the phones open, that we live in a society where we don't have to hide what we're saying in political plays, or do we? You know, that's the question I have. I mean, I know we have true freedom of speech, but do we really in some cases? Just a reminder, I'm Eric Logan here sitting in for Evan Dawson. I'm here with Eric Grody, the director of Gold Ring Arts Journalism and Communications Program at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. Skip Greer, the director of What the Constitution Means to Me at the JCC Center Stage. Sarah Mayer Fried, the actor who plays Heidi in What the Constitution Means to Me. And Carrie Young, who's the director of POTUS at Blackfriars Theater. And of course, when we come back, we want to hear from you as well. At 844-295-8255 or 263-9994 locally, the 585 area code, or you can write us at connections.org. We'll be right back.
I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the next Connections, Congressman Joe Morelli joins us in the first hour talking about why he is running for re-election. In our second hour, a conversation about Prop 1 on the back of your ballot. Supporters refer to it as the Equal Rights Amendment. Opponents are concerned about what it protects and what it could lead to. And we're going to talk about it on Monday.
And we're back. Just a reminder, I'm Eric Logan sitting in for Evan Dawson on Connections. We're here with Eric Grody, the director of the Gold Ring Arts Journalism and Communications Program at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University, Skip Greer, director of What the Constitution Means to Me at the JCC Center Stage, Sarah Mayer Fried, the actor who plays Heidi in What the Constitution Means to Me, and Carrie Young, the director of POTUS at the Blackfriars Theater. That was an interesting point that Evan was just making about Monday's connections, talking about the ERA, because mm-hmm. as we were leaving, mm-hmm. there was actually a table for the ERA at the JCC.
Yep.
You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, the ERA is mentioned, the Equal Rights Amendment is mentioned several times in the play, and its long history and journey to become a ratified amendment. Now, the National Organization of Women have a table to discuss it and possibly get signatures for it. The significance of it plays into some of the stories that Heidi shares in the play about ways that historically marginalized communities might have been better protected with it. And there's a discussion of sort of, have we missed the boat? Has the opportunity passed? Or can we still bring this into fruition? And, you know, when you mentioned earlier about, can we make political theater now without risk? I would say that when this show was on Broadway, What the Constitution Means to Me by Heidi Schreck, she did receive threats while she was running the show. There were people who felt very strongly against some of the things that she was talking about. And I, a little bit, tiny little bit, was like, ooh, I wonder if we're going to have any of that. So far, touch wood, none of that. Mostly, it's been people coming up saying how moved they were, how inspired or enlightened. And occasionally, it's like, you know, I'd like to debate something with you or I'd like to talk about something. But it's always been very civil and respectful. And my hope is that some of the discussions we see in that play helps model for us how to have contrasting viewpoints in safe, respectful, connections-focused ways.
I think some folks forget that certainly within my lifetime, while women won the right to vote narrowly, right? That's something that Susan B. Anthony and her friends fought for. And it wasn't until one particular legislator got a call, I think it was, or a letter from his mom that said, you know, son, you need to do the right thing and vote in favor of this. You know, women having the right to vote. But even within my lifetime, women did not have the right to own property, have credit cards. Really kind of they were owned in every sense of the word. I can't see where marriage was a benefit in those situations.
It was a financial benefit.
It was a financial benefit. Yeah, true. So that has all happened within our lifetimes. And so the need for us to form a more perfect union and liberty and justice for all is a continuous struggle. I would use the word struggle, but a continuous journey, because we become aware more and more of how we've fallen short, and then we try to correct that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And then, of course, there's different viewpoints of have we fallen short or are we getting closer to the goal? And I think another thing that comes up in these conversations is, you know, is our political process truly representative? Are we representing the total population, or is it a small portion of the population that has historically been able to represent us and therefore represented the positions and interests of one group? And so hopefully as we continue to have a more diverse government, we have more diverse viewpoints that help us balance those scales.
Right.
Fingers crossed.
Right. And the reason why I asked the question about do we really have the right to say anything, do we really have the right of free speech, I'm not arguing whether or not the government is trying to clamp down on free speech. That's really what that's all about. But like you said, there's social pressure, you know, threats of violence that can come, or any of those things that would tend to make us not want to say what's really in our hearts and minds. And this kind of theater helps us in those areas. Want to comment either? Any of you?
Well, to bring one point of absolute specificity to it, because you said you're
Thank
not
you.
Sure about the freedom of speech right now, one of the points that is brought up in the play that was given to us by Don Braveman, that's one of his fears, is that freedom of speech is number one in terms of what's happening in the country right now. And I don't want to speak for Don, so Don, I apologize for that if I just did that. However, he pointed us to a CBS News broadcast in which they were talking about bounties that are now on the books, $500 for any student or parent who can turn in their teacher for talking about something in the classroom that they don't think is okay to be talked about in certain states in the country right now. So we think about something like that. That when we start intercepting pure thought in that way in the educational platform, how long is it going to take before that censorship begins to grow and grow and grow? And I think our freedom of speech is being squished, is being tightened and narrowed right now.
Thank you. That's an excellent point to be made.
And I want to give a.
I just want to say goodbye. Skip has to head out.
Thanks, all.
Thank you for being a part of this. And I know that you've got a class to teach, so we don't want to hold you up. And
it was a pleasure. Thank you.
I really appreciate you being a part of this conversation.
Nice to meet you, and great to see you again. See you all later.
All right. See you a little later. Yes. Thank you.
Oh, I was just going to say, in the spirit of what Skip was talking about in terms of bravery and the stakes of mounting a show that is political in nature around election time, that at Blackfriars Theater, Bryn Tischka and Mary Tabali Hoffman, I think, really are exhibiting great bravery along with the board to present this show. It is a controversial POTUS is, you know, it's not for everyone, but it is for everyone. You know, it's a really, really amazing piece to present at this time, so close to an election with such controversial content.
Thank you, Carrie. We're going to go to the phone real quickly. Lisa is on the line, and she has a comment about this kind of political expression. Lisa, welcome.
Hello. I wanted to say I'm a retired constitutional lawyer, and I attended the play at JCC last night with another person who teaches law, particularly to non-lawyers. And it was the most succinct and impactful presentation of a really complicated area of law I've ever heard. It was excellent. It was correct on the law and the legal research down to the most minute detail. It was amazing, and I'm sorry Skip's not there for me to say kudos, because I got there late, and I got there just as it was starting, and so I didn't even realize that he was the director. It was a phenomenal service to the community and a lot of fun, and really moving. I wish it was going to be held over longer, because it's really a wonderful play.
Yes, it is. Lisa, thank you so much. So what was the thing that grabbed you most about it? I know you talk about the legal accuracy of this, but what was it about the play that grabbed you the most?
I think the presentation of the perspectives about it, and highlighting what you were raising a minute ago, which was, are we free to say what we want to say or feel the need to say? The acting and the switching of roles of the primary actor in the play from the present to the past to the future, and the same for other characters, allowed the presentation of something that showed where she was then, what she was allowed to say, what she didn't feel she could say because it was too hurtful and too close, and who the audience was. Those things allowed a voice of something that is really difficult to talk about. The way that was presented was amazing, and I think allowed some empathy for people who were not in that situation themselves, but who were seeing, I think, a pretty accurate presentation of someone's inability to talk, talking about their inability to have raised things, the clumsiness of when you first start to talk about those things. It was an amazing piece of drama and of history and the present.
I like the word you used, Lisa, empathy. I hadn't thought about that, because what it does, one of the things it does when a play, and the way that Sarah did this, the way that she performed this, first allows you, and this isn't the first time I've seen a play at Center Stage that's done that, first allows you to identify with the character and have empathy for that, and then allows you, if you allow yourself, to see where you fit into that story and, you know, how... whether or not you're a protagonist or an antagonist. I mean, those things can all be true for any of us that are in similar situations. So I really like how you drew that out, Lisa.
Well, thanks for the heads up about the play.
Very glad. All right, more full disclosure. Lisa's my neighbor and friend. We have loved each other as friends, just, you know, just as neighbors and friends for a very long time, and I knew that as soon as I saw this, Lisa and her friend would want to see this, because it's like awesome.
Well, we're so glad you came, Lisa, and thank you for sharing those insights.
Yeah, thank you for doing it. Bye.
All right, bye, bye, Lisa.
Eric, can I speak to the empathy
please,
for a second?
Please,
so,
do.
This, I can't take credit for this. Oscar Eustace, who was the artistic director of the Public Theater in New York, first brought this idea to my attention. But he pointed out that theater and democracy as these two concepts were invented in the same city, Athens, within the space of about 15, 20 years of one another. Mm. And maybe that's a coincidence, but obviously it isn't. I mean, there's something there's something going on there. And his take on that was that empathy was baked into, you know, will we ever have the chance to decide whether to bury our brother against the king's wishes? No, probably not. But the questions that you ask yourself about power and the limitations of power and when it's the right or good thing to buck that, you know, put those audiences in a position where they had to ask themselves, what will these characters do next? And what would I do in that same situation? Mm. And as you ask those questions and you start to realize that there might be some space between your answers of that, and that can be sort of sobering, that the exercises that came as a result of theater very possibly made it easier to envision entrusting other power into other individuals.
Right.
And I think so. I think that politics and theater are really, really, really tightly connected and have been basically since day one.
And I like the statement you made there about how would I react in that situation. I am not a thespian at the level of Sarah by any stretch of the imagination. But I was a member, and I'm a member of the Friends of Mount Hope Cemetery. And years ago, we had a collaboration that we did with the Rochester Museum and Science Center with their players. And we actually took people on tours of the cemetery in an acting manner. Mm. So what would happen is Thomas James and I'm trying to think of the woman's name who, you know, historical people, Austin Stewart, excuse me. Would do what was the name of the play was called A Circle of Friends. And we would have people come and come around us. And then we would say, hey, we're heading over to see the grave of Frederick Douglass, actually the grave of Annie Douglass, his daughter. Frederick has returned to town so that he can be at the grave of his daughter. He's returning from being overseas in Ireland, I think it was. And as we did the tour, we would run into Mary Anthony, Susan B. Anthony's sister. We would run into Thomas James. I'm getting the wrong name. This has been back a little while, back a little ways. The first African American superintendent of public schools. We run into Isaac and Amy Post, who were very much supporters of the Underground Railroad and abolition. And ultimately, we would end up at the gravesite, the actual gravesite of Frederick Douglass, and he would be standing there with his wife Anna, and then they would have their chat together that we were in on, that we got to watch and learn. And the impact that that play had on me doing that play was the same thing that you just said, which is, what would I do in that situation? And the thing, if we think that in the same situation we would be the heroes of the story, the truth of the matter is probably not, right? That's what we want. That's what we want to learn. And it helps reveal that about ourselves. And in some cases, helps us behave differently, right? It illuminates that situation so that we say, you know what? Maybe I need to try to be the hero of this story. And it doesn't, you know, it means taking risks, like you're talking. It's not always an easy thing to speak out and to stand for justice, to stand for rights, to stand for the women in our lives, to stand for the people of other minorities, not just black in my case, but to look at other minorities, other undervalued voices, and to be able to stand with them for the point of justice. Those are important considerations, and I really appreciate how, Sarah, you brought that alive for us.
Thank you. It's a real privilege to get to do this play, and I cannot wait to see POTUS. I have it very rarely read a play and just from reading it on the page been laughing out loud, so I know it's going to be amazing, and Blackfriars is amazing.
Yes.
And being here in Rochester, we have such a rich history with abolition, with suffragist actions. Like, this is our legacy, and I think it makes sense for a Rochester community to re-examine these things and, you know, continue that beautiful history of being engaged and, you know, in some ways being a beacon for democracy.
Carrie, how did POTUS impact you as you were, as you've been preparing it? You're still preparing it to get it ready.
We are still preparing. We're going into tech this weekend, so we're in the thick of it. It's been so cathartic, actually, because of the way the playwright approaches empowerment of women. And one of the running through lines is, why isn't she president? Mm. And that being able to say that out loud and to share that with the seven women performing, it's been very helpful in trying to make sense of how divided we are as a country, and how just terrible people can be to each other, and things that we're saying about each other, and the way we're treating fellow human beings is it's heartbreaking. Yes. And to be able to laugh with people while making statements, and while trying to find a voice and trying to use the voice. You talk about free speech and hiding things and trying to say things in a not so subtle way. This one just owns it and takes it on.
Puts it right out there.
And it's been really, really, really great. Wonderful. Well, thank you.
Carrie, thank you so much for being with us today. It's really important.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Very much, Sarah. Thank you for being with us as well. It's a wonderful day. Eric, thank you. Eric. Sorry, I'm getting it mixed up. Eric, thank you for being, you know, it's my own name. I should know better. I want to encourage you to go to these plays. The setting for the Blackfriars Theater is wonderful, accessible. You're right there in the scene of the action. Same thing for the JCC. So take advantage of this. It is wonderful, and I want to encourage you to do that. I want to thank you, Rob Braden, and Julie Williams, the producer. I'd like to thank you, Megan Mack, the executive producer, and, of course, Evan Dawson for the connections at WXXI. We will see you on the other side.